Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Retail is adrift in dangerous, choppy waters. For as long as most of us can remember, we shopped till we dropped at shopping malls, big box stores, and ma and pa Main Street retailers. But with the digital revolution, we discovered that many of our purchases could be made in the comfort of our own homes, online, with a click of a mouse. We could stay on the couch and have our purchases delivered to us. That is when mainline brick-and-mortar retailers began to feel the pinch, but the pandemic shifted that transition into overdrive. Major heritage stores have been closing or filing for bankruptcy. So have malls. This is happening nationwide, raising serious economic concerns, because for every major department store that shutters a location, for every mall that closes, thousands of jobs are put in jeopardy, and the landscape becomes littered with large, shuttered retail complexes afloat in a sea of empty parking spaces. Where is all this headed, and what are the implications for workers and shoppers? In other words, you. Daphne Howland is a senior reporter for Retail Dive. That's a newsletter covering the most impactful news and trends shaping retail. She's back with us this morning. Welcome back. It's good to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Catherine Muchogrosso is also a returning champion. She is a retail business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back to you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
And Dr. Saravanan Kesavan is a professor of operations at the UNC Chapel Hill Kenan Flagner Business School, who studies retail operations and employees in those operations. Thank you for joining us, too. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. Great to be here.
Daphne Howland, let me begin with you. Here in Charlotte, we witnessed in the past year or so the bankruptcy of Belk, a locally homegrown department store that is no longer owned by the original founders. We also know that Northlake Mall is in receivership or headed for foreclosure. The pandemic shuttered countless retailers here and around the country, large and small. How would you describe the current state of retail in America?
It's interesting because in some ways the pandemic has been papering over some really long-term problems, believe it or not, because people were spending less on travel and entertainment and going out to restaurants. They had more money to buy things, and that's why retailers had a pretty good Christmas. But the things you're talking about when it comes to malls have really been deteriorating as a destination for shopping for many, many years. And there was really no way, with people not going out to shop, for them to come out of it. You know, if anything, it's just been worse.
You cover retail every day nationwide as a part of your job. And I suppose if you do that, or if you are an employee in a retail store or in a retail environment, this is very concerning to you. But how concerned should the average person be who doesn't work in retail, who maybe has already begun to shift their buying habits away from brick and mortar toward online? Should we even care?
I mean, I think it depends on how attached you are to your local mall. In the past several months, people have been getting back out to stores and even malls. So you'll see year over year, it's sort of obvious on its face, more people are heading to malls to shop. And the thing is, I think the mall was, even in its heyday, you know, I don't know where you would peg that, 60s, 70s, certainly the early 80s, when the mall was a destination for people to just hang out. Mm-hmm. I recently went down sort of a rabbit hole and saw this really long feature by Charles Kuralt about a mall. And I think it was in Kansas, Overland Park, around there. And you if you stuck with it, because it was a really long piece, you could see the weaknesses in that kind of destination, the enclosed mall, the corporate, you know, chain stores lacking some local flavor. So I think that with the proliferation of malls, I think we have too many probably. It was sort of inevitable. Then you add things like e-commerce and the fact that people don't have that kind of time anymore, really.
Yeah. Catherine, let's bring it down to the local level here, because we already mentioned Belk and North Lake Mall, but just this morning in the Charlotte Observer, there was the announcement of several new stores that are about to open at South Park, high-end stores for the most part, and South Park has become this high-end luxury mall, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. But how would you assess what's been happening here locally in the last 18 months, 24 months?
Right. As you said, South Park Mall, I just wrote a story that, you know, they're adding two more stores on a long list of other stores they've recently added. They've added like eight new stores, including Gucci and Scotch and Soda and Psycho Bunny. So they're getting these different type of retailers in there.
Yeah.
Whereas then you have North Lake Mall that is in receivership and is likely to be sold. That's what they're trying to stabilize it right now for value. And then, you know, they intend to sell it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if you personally go up to North Lake Mall, I mean, they have the Apple store, they have, it's a busy place still when I've been up there this summer. So I think there's places for malls still, but obviously you have big competitors, even in our area, with Amazon that's hiring 3,500 more people in the Charlotte area.
Belk has been around in this area for over 100 years. It's a locally owned, locally grown store. It was locally owned and operated until about, what, 3-4 years ago when it was bought by another concern, and they got themselves into trouble and had to declare bankruptcy, and it was over in the blink of an eye. I mean, they literally did it in Texas, where I think the bankruptcy laws are much more lenient, and overnight, that was mm-hmm. over, and the customer yeah. noticed nothing at the retail, at the cash register. Nothing changed in those stores. I'm sure other things behind the scenes may have changed. But were their troubles generated by the shift in retail shopping habits, or were they generated by the fact that we have a new owner that came in several years ago and took on all this debt service that could not be serviced?
I would say that it's probably both. The debt load on top of a changing environment, you know, with how people are shopping, and people aren't heading to the stores at the mall specifically anymore. You know, they go online and they see what they have too. I'm sure Daphne would agree with that. You know, people are changing how their habits for shopping.
Doctor,
I think there's another element here in that the way malls worked was just a massive volume of people, and the department store, which a department store like Belk, been around for more than a century, beloved by the community, attracted so many people that even though there weren't that many sales being made, the volume of people meant that everyone did okay. The department store can't attract that many people anymore. The mall itself can't attract that many people. And, you know, Belk, I think there's remains a lot of love for Belk, but the younger generation isn't going to translate their grandparents' love for Belk into yeah. shopping there.
And we're going to talk about that, too, because it's shifting tastes, and tastes have shifted before, which is how we got shopping malls in the first place, it seems to me. Dr. Kesavan, one of your areas of concentration is your research into improving labor productivity in retail and worker well-being. Amazon, which seems to be the biggest beneficiary of this shift in shopping habits, does not have what we would call the best reputation when it comes to employee relations and the way employees feel they are being treated and their well-being. As this transition toward more and more online shopping becomes the thing, are we going to see more Amazon-like activity in terms of treatment of employees? And is their treatment really that bad?
Yeah, great question, Mike. So as companies, as consumers shift from purchasing in person to online, there are going to be several changes to the workforce. One of them is that the typical brick and mortar retail stores, like the departmental stores, tend to employ a lot of women and women of color. And as we go into online retail, online marketplaces, the profile of the employees changes. And the retail sector itself has been criticized for a long time for providing poor quality jobs. And by poor quality, it is not just lower wages, but also, you know, the kinds of jobs, highly fluctuating jobs, where the schedules are not informed to the employees till the start of the week. And there is also no consistency in the number of hours that they work from week to week. And all of this means, and also the growth of involuntary part-time jobs, which is employees want to work full-time, but they don't get full-time jobs, so they often end up with part-time jobs, and as a result have to manage multiple part-time jobs across retailers who are having their own work practices. So I think the trend has already been that the quality of jobs in retail has been dropping, and my hope is that the advent of technology, it changes.
And when you talk about the shift in terms of the makeup of the employees in retail, when it, on the floor at any department store in most retail operations, many of the employees are women. But if you're running Amazon, I would think, maybe I'm wrong, that many of the employees are men because they're not interacting with customers. They're lifting boxes.
That's right. I mean, there are some statistics that show that e-commerce tends to be dominated by men and white men, male, while lots of jobs like cashiers and you know, in-store jobs were typically taken up by women and women of color.
It always fascinated me that people working in stores can be on their feet 8, 9, 10 hours a day with very few breaks and difficulty even using the restroom in some cases if the business is brisk like it is at Christmas time. And I'm sure that traditional retailers are furiously looking at ways to improve their situation. So in the situation that we have now, is it likely that they can help improve employee conditions, Dr. Kesavan, because it seems to me that's a luxury in this environment?
Yeah, one of the big challenges in the way employers tend to look at employees is they treat employees as a cost factor. And if you look at the various costs in a retail store, if you break it down into, say, controllable and uncontrollable expenses, turns out labor expense is one of the largest expense. And unfortunately, many retailers tend to treat employees as costs rather than treat them as assets. And technology, I think, gives a way out. If we use technology the right way, you can unleash the power of the employees and use them to provide greater service. And in fact, hopefully win the battle with online marketplaces. But if you use, on the other hand, technology to just as a monitoring tool, then it's possible that employees end up at a worse place than they already are.
I have 30 seconds, so very quickly, is improving operational performance or increasing employee productivity something that's expensive, something that can be done without harming the employee? Very quickly.
I think, you know, my research shows that it's a win-win. By increasing employee productivity, you can improve employer profits too.
And we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the future of retail, where we are today, where we're headed, and the decline of malls and department stores and in-person shopping with Daphne Howland, senior reporter for Retail Dive. They cover the situation with retail nationally. Catherine Muchagrosso does much the same for the Charlotte Observer. And Dr. Saravanan Kesavan is professor of operations at the Kenan Flagler School of Business at UNC Chapel Hill, studying retail. retail as well. Daphne, in April, Business Insider wrote, quote, that the last decade has seen American cultural touchstones disintegrate as part of the retail apocalypse. Actually, there are lots of cultural touchstones that have nothing to do with retail that seem to be falling by the wayside, including democracy. But they point out that major retailers that took a century to build their brands saw them collapse into dust, essentially, in less than a decade. And John Clapp, a professor at the University of Connecticut Center for Real Estate, says the American mall is in a death spiral. We've already talked about the fact of that. Why?
I mean, I think there are so many forces at play here. One is simply that, when it was a great retail model, what do? When things work well, we copy it, we do more of it. So I think there are too many malls got built. Then there's the fact, just from my reporting, that the middle class is being squeezed. We need two incomes to hope to be into the middle class in a lot of cases for most households. So if you've got two full-timers, you don't have a lot of free time to shop at the mall. So it's time and money. I think the middle class is being squeezed for both time and money. And, malls need people to spend time and money.
I've said for years, as we've talked about, lowering salaries not keeping up with the cost of living, that businesses need to understand that if you don't pay enough, ain't nobody there to buy your stuff, because they can't afford to do it. Catherine, we've talked about a little bit about the decline of department stores and the decline of malls, but one of the malls in this area that seems to be more than holding on is South Park. And that's because several years ago, their previous owners, and now Simon Properties that owns them today, have been working steadily to make it a, quote, luxury mall, end quote, with higher end stores like Neiman Marcus, and which is also in bankruptcy, and Nordstrom and other boutique retailers. If they are healthy at South Park, is that why? Unmute yourself. Unmute yourself. There you go.
Sorry about that. I would definitely say that Simon has captured a whole new, they're continuing to capture the high end luxury, different boutique shops, adding stores like, Psycho Bunny that has a twist on a classic men's apparel, and as well as Boss, which is another men's sportswear and clothing store. But then, you've also got Concord Mills that's owned by Simon that recently captured Dick's Sporting Goods from Northlake Mall. So, and then along with Simon Property in Charlotte, you have Charlotte Premium Outlets, which always seems to be rather busy with people checking out those discounted stores.
So you have two different populations going to two different kinds of malls, different profiles. You have the high-end shopper going to places like South Park, and then you have the discount shopper, who are people who have been squeezed out of the malls, as you've said, Daphne, because of income levels, etc. This is the idea that luxury malls are doing well across the country seems to go in the face of logic. It seems to me, if I were a luxury buyer, why would I want to go to a mall when I could just sit in the comfort of my luxury home on my really nice laptop and buy it and have it delivered to me? Why would I want to sully myself by going into a mall? Catherine, I'll start with you.
I would say because you want to see the products and you want to touch them and feel them, and if you're looking for a Gucci bag or some product, you want to see it and feel it and have it that day, likely.
Yeah. Daphne, one of the reasons I'm told that luxury malls are successful in this environment is that they don't have to cater to people hunting for bargains. And that speaks to a whole societal issue that we've already kind of brought up. The declining middle class, they are the ones that made shopping malls popular in the first place. They are the ones who had money to buy things and turned shopping experiences into entertainment experiences, things to do. Let's go shopping and buy stuff that we don't need. And that went on for a long, long time. But since the Great Recession in 2007, most income growth has gone to the upper income earners, squeezing middle class households. So they've shifted where they spend, but they did not migrate to Sears or JCPenney. They went online. Why?
You know, I don't know that they entirely went online. Most, by far, the largest percentage of retail is conducted in brick and mortar stores. Sears at one point was the Amazon of its day. Mm-hmm. It was a catalog at first, and it started off doing what you said. People could order things and have it delivered to their doorstep. And eventually Sears started opening stores, and we see Amazon doing that now. But I think that done right, retail is a form of entertainment. Shopping is an activity that people like to do if they have the time and if they have the money. So certainly wealthier shoppers are going to have more time and more money. And it does remain to be seen, though, if copying, doing that copying thing, if we don't end up with too many luxury stores and too many places. Yeah.
Sarah Vonnen, I don't know that this falls into your area of expertise, but I'll ask you the question anyway, and if you can't answer it, that's okay. It's been predicted that roughly a quarter of the 1,000 malls in America are going to close their doors, shutter completely within the next 3 to 5 years. Do you see a way of repurposing those properties, into turning them into something else so that we don't have these big hulks as I said, a sea of empty parking spaces? Or is the land more valuable than the properties anyway, and the owners of these malls will make out when they sell?
Great question. So in terms of the amount of retail space in the U.S., there are some statistics about how there is about 24 square foot for every single person in the U.S., that is dedicated to retail. In Europe and China, that's about 2 to 5 square foot. So there is an argument to be made that there's probably too much of retail space. And what we are seeing now is a correction. And even though as we live through it, it might seem like a unique event, I do want to emphasize that retail goes through these kinds of changes periodically. Right? I mean, over a century back, we used to have mom and pop stores. A lot of them were wiped out when the departmental store chains came through. And then a lot of departmental stores were wiped out when big box retail like Walmart opened up. And then we had category killers, and then we had online retail. So periodically we have these changes. And I think the underlying cause for the change, I completely agree with Daphne. It's the two things. One is the time, the other one is money. I mean, the distribution of wealth skews towards higher, income people, right? And as we say in retail, retail is like bank robbery. It happens where the money is. So yeah, that's why you're seeing a lot of malls being open for luxury retailers. And the other aspect, which is time, I think the biggest culprit, I think in my mind, is what we have in our hands, like the smartphones. On average, people spend about 5 hours on their smartphones. So the need to go to the mall to kill time is much lower now, because now you can spend that same time on your smartphone. So any mall of the future has to compete with the smartphone. Mm.
Department stores. Well, let's go back to that for a second, because every city in America had its own homegrown department stores. We had Ivy's here for a long time in Charlotte. I grew up in the D.C. area, where we had Woodward and Lothrop and Hecht's, the Heck Company, Landsberg's, Julius Garfinkel. And then suddenly all those homegrown stores, and maybe there were too many of them, I don't know, were consolidated as they were bought up by other concerns. Macy's went from being a New York-based store to being a national chain. And we have Macy's here. We have Nordstrom, a Pacific Northwest store, all over the country now. But even they face major challenges. One expert said that that department stores have no real purpose going forward. Why have we fallen out of love, Daphne, with department stores? We used to love them.
Oh, well, this is one of my favorite topics. Macy's, first of all, you'll notice if you go to most cities, some of the most beloved names, including Hex that you mentioned, are now Macy's stores. Mm-hmm. You know, Marshall Field in Chicago, that city was in love with that store and with the man who you know, founded it. When Macy's changed the name to Macy's, there are still people in Chicago that are extremely resentful of that. And it wasn't just the name. It was that Macy's whole idea was to bring efficiencies by centralizing the buying and centralizing a lot of operations. That meant you took the personal connection between the store associates and the buyers of merchandise who would go to New York knowing what their local customers would want. That isn't, you know, I don't know if that is something that you put in a retail playbook, but Macy's clearly thought that the efficiencies they could get with central operations would override the value of that. And I think there was a great loss right at the time when I think the middle class started to falter. So if you take away some of the strongest appeal of the department store and then take away a lot of what made you able to spend time and money in a department store, it's sort of a perfect storm.
It always struck me as odd that most malls of any decent size has at least two major department stores, sometimes three and four or five department stores. And really, they were minor differences, certainly differences in the decor and maybe the service level, but pretty much the same. They were all one-stop shopping locations where you could buy everything from dishes and sofas to lingerie to shoes for everybody in the family. Amazon has become that place now for a lot of people because you can buy anything, even more so at Amazon. Is this really, Daphne, all about consumer convenience? Is that all we really wanted out of any of these experiences?
I don't think it is what we want out of all of these experiences. I think we want to discover things. You know, one of the best department stores of today is not a department store at all. It's probably Target. They're using a lot of the language of the old department stores, in their newer stores, the ones that have been remodeled. They've improved the lighting. They have vignettes and sections that are so appealingly merchandised. And the people I've talked to who have expertise in merchandising and department store merchandising, I think they tell me, you know, Target is taking that old fashioned vernacular and using it in a way that a lot of department stores are failing to do. I mean, a lot of Macy's stores, they're huge, they're a jumble. You can't necessarily find someone to help you. They've lost a lot of the supreme elements that made them so special as a retailer.
Yeah. Retail is at the mercy of its shoppers, I guess, Sarah Vanden. And we've already talked a little bit about shifting tastes, et cetera, and new technologies enabling people to sit in the comfort of their own home and buy anything they want and have it delivered mostly free of charge if you're an Amazon Prime customer. Is there anything retailers can do to slow that down or stave it off? Or are they doomed?
Well, I think one of the biggest assets of retailers is their proximity to customers. And that's something that Amazon does not have. So what we are seeing is retailers are now evolving an omni-channel fulfillment strategy where customers can buy online, return it in the store, or see the product in the store and then go back and order it online. So all of these conveniences are unique to retailers who have brick and mortar. So I think that's one way retailers can, brick and mortar retailers can fight back. And ultimately it is about providing a better service than Amazon in order to retain them. So price indeed is a differentiator, but I think when customers perceive that they are getting better value, even if they are paying a little bit more, then brick and mortar retailers can turn profitable.
Catherine, we've talked about this before, maybe not you and I, but other people on this program in the past have talked about one of the selling points for Nordstrom has always been their remarkable customer service. The legend has it that if you go and shop for a pair of shoes at Nordstrom and they don't have it, but they know that Belk does, sales associate will go over to Belk, buy the shoes and bring them back to you and sell them to you at Nordstrom. I don't know if that's true or not. But is that what people want? Is that level of service something that brick-and-mortar retailers need to start thinking more about and providing? And can they afford to do that in an environment where their customer base is shrinking?
That would be a question that I think Daphne could answer more clearly. I know that, like, when I was covering Belk and its bankruptcy, a lot of people were saying, you know, that they weren't getting the styles that they wanted and they weren't getting the service with being able to find somebody in stores, a worker readily available was part of their issues too. People want a service when they go to the stores, which means interacting with somebody who works there.
Do you want to take a stab at that, Daphne? Because one of the things I've noticed is that it is difficult to find a sales associate anymore in many stores, if not most stores.
I mean, we a lot of businesses are having trouble at this very moment hiring enough people for any location, any business of any kind. But this was a problem for retail before the pandemic. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, which is if you train people well and pay them well, they will probably serve as good customer service and good brand representatives for you. I mean, being Daphne, a department store employee used to be a profession.
Yeah. Daphne Howland, senior reporter for Retail Dive. She's here with Catherine Mucciagrosso from The Observer and Sarah Van Inkisavan from UNC Chapel Hill. When we come back, employment and economic consequences of all this. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the fate and future of retail. Catherine Mucciagrosso writes about this in the Charlotte Observer. And Catherine, do you have any idea of how many people are currently employed in the retail sector in Charlotte? Any idea at all?
Unfortunately, I do not have that number.
Do you know if it's on the decline in terms of the number of employees that they have as compared to 5 years ago, the number of employees they can attract into their fold as they could before the pandemic? Any idea of what's going on there?
Yeah, I don't know either. Okay. I do know that, you know, as Daphne had mentioned, you know, during COVID and with retailers having a hard time finding employees, a lot of times they're talking about, oh, people are shifting to Amazon. And in our area of Charlotte, obviously Amazon is growing and they're hiring, you know, 3,500 people right now.
Sarah Vannon, as Daphne said just prior to the break, retail used to be a profession. I mean, people spent their whole lives in it as sales associates and tailors and people like that in department stores. I guess it's already changed. It's not beginning to change. It has changed. But do you know nationwide how big a role the retail sector plays in employment of people?
Yeah, there are about 29 million workers in the U.S. directly employed in retail, probably another 30, 40 million indirectly employed. And a lot of the workers are, you know, about two-thirds of those workers are folks working in the store, the front end, not the corporate or headquarters. And most of those jobs are cashiers, sales clerks, stock you know, people who fill the stock in the store. And unfortunately, these are the jobs that are also declining when you shut down stores.
A Time magazine reported that since 2002, Daphne, department stores have lost 448,000 jobs, a 25% decline, while e-commerce added only 178,000 jobs over the last 15 years. This is a nationwide trend of, and the pandemic, I would assume, is accelerating that. Were those jobs lost because of downsizing, because of loss of customers, or were they lost for other reasons?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of stores have closed in the past several years pre-pandemic. Part of that is related to the decline of the mall. I mean, it was a few years ago. He's no longer CEO of Gap Inc., but the previous CEO of Gap Inc. was saying it's just not a good use of our money. That company, which runs Gap, Old Navy, Banana Republic, and now Athleta, is closing mall stores, moving to things like strip malls and downtown locations. Speaking of, you know, getting closer to your customer, the pandemic might have, it remains to be seen because of all the other pressures, but people, because they're sort of stuck at home, more likely to shop in their neighborhood, are starting to have a little bit of a newfound appreciation that is emerging for their local retailers. So there might be some opportunity there. I think it still needs to be played out.
Any idea, Saravana, the economic consequences of 448,000 retail employees losing their jobs?
I mean, there's going to be a huge domino effect, right? I mean, like I said, most of these workers, it's not just the 450,000 jobs are lost, but it's also who lost those jobs. Retail is typically the entry point job industry for many people, and it also provides employment to folks with little or no educational background. And when they lose those jobs, and like I said earlier, a lot of women and women of color work in retail, and when they lose the jobs, alternate forms of employment might be harder. So I think, and many of the families are single family household, and so the impact is not just monetary, but I think it's also a societal impact.
And as you've said, we are over-retailed in terms of the number of square feet per person of retail there is available in America. But retail vacancies are now at a seven-year high. Major chains have announced closures of more than 12,000 stores last year. Moody's Analytics projects that roughly 135 million square feet of vacant space may become available in regional malls nationwide in the next 5 years. What are the economic stakes at play here, Dr. Kesavan, if that does come to pass?
Well, I mean, right off the bat, the mall owners have to figure out what to do with the space, right? I mean, that's why, especially when departmental stores go out of business, it is a double-edged sword, because departmental stores are often the anchor tenant, and they drive the traffic to these malls. And when you have a large departmental store like Neiman Marcus or Belk or JCPenney, when they shut down, they have a huge impact on the other tenants in the mall. And sometimes the tenants have laws that say that when you have the anchor tenant vacate, then the rents have to be reduced. So this all points to a potential domino effect. So the impact cannot be viewed just in isolation.
Daphne, I think it was you that wrote an article about maybe we don't need anchor stores anymore in malls. Was that you that wrote that article, or am I thinking of somebody else?
I did touch on that, and it's I couldn't tell, honestly, in my reporting if this was just a function of accepting reality that anchors were closing, and so we need to figure out how to run this mall without one type of thing. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to the fact that department stores are not the attractor of traffic that they once were. So It's a big loss for a mall in terms of empty space and the clauses that get triggered that say we get to leave or we get lower rent. But keeping a department store around is not the boon it once was either.
We've already talked about the impact on women because women make up the bulk of retail employees in these malls and most department stores. I think that they outnumber men 2-1 in those locations. And the pandemic, though, has caused a lot of people to rethink their career paths. I think, Daphne, you mentioned that it's difficult now for some retailers to find people to be sales associates because they don't want to anymore. And in fact, the Washington Post talked to some people who have left those jobs, and one said, "My life isn't worth a dead-end job." Wow. Are we seeing a shift in attitudes about in workers that will also come to bear on these department stores who are already being plagued by other factors?
I mean, you know, it might go back to something that you have mentioned before, which is to be a retail worker, we saw in the pandemic, is to be a frontline worker in grocery stores in particular, mass merchants like Walmart. And we saw videos play out where people in those jobs took a lot of abuse from the public. They were the ones who took the brunt of any kind of either local ordinance or store policy that required masks, for example. In the meantime, even with the sort of pandemic bonuses that they were getting, it wasn't the greatest paying job. Factor in things like childcare, and it starts to look like it might be not worth showing up.
I don't know which one of you who would be able to talk about this, but it seems to me that we live now in this highly bifurcated society where we're left or right, Republican or Democrat. We don't like each other. We don't know each other. We can't compromise on anything. We live in our own silos and associate with our own tribes. We used to be a country that had three television networks, and so everybody watched Green Acres or Mannix or something, and they talked about it, and they all watched it at the same time, so they talked about it at work the next day. Common experience. We all went to work in offices, which we don't do much anymore. Common experiences. We all went shopping and spent time at the malls. Common experiences. And as these malls decline in their value to us and in our experience of them, what happens next? How concerned should we be about this loss, Catherine, of another common experience?
Well, from what I've been actually hearing from mall experts is that's exactly what malls need to do to bring people back is to create experiences, whether it be, you know, they're bringing in gyms, they're bringing in something that people can go to have an experience. It can be the escape rooms. It can be something that they do that way could help bring people back.
But should we be concerned that this is one more thing in America, Daphne, that we no longer have in common? We don't go. Well, that's the one that we do. We have this in common. We don't go to malls, but we used to, and we used to hang out in the food court, and we used to go shopping together. You don't go shopping together online.
You don't go shopping together online. You know, at the holidays, you'll still see people going out to get some of that festive atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
How much longer will that work? Because I think that festive atmosphere is driven a lot by television commercials guilting you into needing to spend a fortune at the holidays. Otherwise, you're not a good person and you don't love your family. How much longer are people going to buy into that?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like this came up, you know, it was a Charlie Brown Christmas where we first learned that, and we've kept at it. The fourth quarter remains really important to retailers, and I think that festivity is mm-hmm. part of it. And I think we might see this year that it lingers. There was a lot of excitement from the fact that the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is going to be on again this year.
Right.
But when it comes to what you're talking about, the gathering at the mall, that the sort of new town square that it was for a while there, I think that element is really dissipated.
The other thing that might impact the holidays came out in the news, I think it was yesterday, that a lot of these container ships bringing in goods from overseas are stuck in harbors for whatever reason and cannot be unloaded. So they're suggesting that people begin their holiday shopping now, which means if you're cannibalizing what may happen from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Dr. Kesavan, malls vanquished Main Street's Ma and Pa stores. Big box stores killed many Ma and Pa retailers and hurt department stores. Amazon is sucking the lifeblood out of both. What's next?
It's hard to predict what's going to come next, but we know the only thing that's constant in retail is change. So what we are seeing now is definitely going to change in the future. We're already seeing that online retail is morphing itself to omni-channel retail. So customers are no longer just satisfied with ordering products online and have it delivered. They also want to be able to go to the store and have the touch and feel. So many retailers are starting what's called showrooms. Basically, these are physical stores with no inventory except a sample that you can go and touch and feel. A classic example is this company Warby Parker that makes eyeglasses. So they started off as an online store, and then obviously consumers would like to feel the glasses on the face and see how it fits. So they started these showrooms with zero inventory. You could go there, see how the glass fits, but you would still make the purchase it through online. So retailers at this point are basically playing catch up with Amazon, and they're trying out various different models. And it's like I said, it's the future will be different from what we're seeing now.
A lot of Main Streets are making a comeback, Daphne, and they're doing it by putting very specialty shops in with brave retailers who came in before the customers arrived and took a chance, but they're reviving these Main Street shopping locations. Are there lessons to be learned in that revival for shopping malls and department stores?
I don't know. I mean, part of that is the location. It's hard to beat a nice downtown street, and that's where you're most likely to find this one type of retailer that I think is really is a sign of hope for individual retailers like that, which is the local bookstore. Independent bookstores were supposed to be vanquished by Amazon. They sell the same exact things as Amazon does. They sell them at full price most of the time compared to Amazon's 25 or 30% off. And yet a lot of them are really thriving. Amazon really seemed to take out Borders and even Barnes and Noble before the independents. So I think they show that there is something to be said for individuality, maybe well-paid, employees and local loyalty.
Restaurants today, you already mentioned this, Catherine, need to provide an experience for diners in many cases. Is that something that retailers must consider, and must all retailers also have an online ordering platform that works?
Yes. I mean, I would say yes. That is what people are looking for when they go into retail stores, and a lot of retailers are starting to get more specific, train people to be more specialized, so that when you come in and you're looking for a specific dress or shoes, they know more about the product and can help you better.
Only the future knows what the future holds, and I guess we'll revisit this topic in the future. Catherine Mitchell-Grosso is a retail business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Daphne Howland reports on it for Retail Dive, and Dr. Sarah Vannen-Kesavan is professor of operations studying retail operations at the Keenan Flagler School of Business at UNC Chapel Hill. Thanks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.